Yashoda Nandana, Brother Janaram, Yashoda Nandana, Yamuna Tira, Vanachari, Yamuna Tira, Jaya Radha Madhava, Punjabi Hari, Jaya. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Samavetta Bhakti Vrindiki Jai. Go Premanandi. All glories to assemble the bodies. All glories to assemble the bodies. All glories to assemble the bodies. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Karanga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Buddhade Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasota Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvashesha Shunyavadi Paschacharesha Tarane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 74, Verse 5. Navaite jita bhaktanam, mamaham iti madhava, tvam tav eti cha nana di. Pasunam eva vaikriti.
Mama,
Ajita, O unconquerable one, Bhaktanam, of the devotees, Mama Aham Iti, mine and I, Madhava, O Krishna, Tvam Tava Iti, you and yours, Cha, and Na Na, of differences, D, mentality, Pasunam, of animals, Eva, as if, Vikriti, perverted. Translation, O unconquerable Madhava, even your devotees make no distinctions of I and mine, you and yours, for this is the perverted mentality of animals. Report, as an ordinary person thinks, I am so attractive, intelligent, and wealthy that people should simply serve me and do what I want. Why should I obey anyone else? This proud, separatist mentality is also found in animals who battle one another for supremacy. Such a mentality is conspicuously absent in the mind of an advanced devotee, and it is certainly absent in the sublime, omniscient mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation, O unconquerable Madhava, even your devotees make no distinction of I and mine, you and yours, for this is the perverted mentality of the animals. So Yudhisthira has been praising Krishna as the Supreme Lord, and he's described him in several different ways, very, very briefly, in order to establish his position as the object of worship for his sacrifice. Because as he previously indicated, the whole purpose of the sacrifice was simply a glorification of Krishna rather than establishing Yudhisthira as the king. So he begins by praising Krishna as the Supreme Lord, which is not accepted by many people and also difficult for some people to understand. So to praise Krishna as Supreme Lord is, you could say, a little bit special because some people may have doubt. Nevertheless, Yudhisthira establishes Krishna as the Supreme Lord, just as Vishnu or Ramchandra would be supreme. So Krishna also is, in spite of the fact that he often hides his supreme position. And that was described by the fact that he often obeys his devotees. Instead of commanding the devotees, he obeys the devotees and he becomes their servant. In either case, this should not detract from the position of the Supreme Lord. Rather, it is one of his good qualities. Here in this verse here, Yudhisthira's describing that the Lord is perfect in any case, and no matter what he does, no one can criticize it. And even if he does activities, those activities in no way make him material. He's always Supreme Lord, even if he does obey his devotees or whatever. So he's always in a supreme position, completely detached from any material motive. So in this verse, he switches to his devotees. Of course, he indicates that the Lord has no concept of pride or possessiveness and a false identity represented by the words mama and aham. So aham indicates I, and mama means mine. And then we have thinking of other people, that is you, and those things are yours. So we distinguish self from others and one's possessions from others' possessions. So these terms are often used to describe material identity. our acharyas, of course, point out that also there's a spiritual aham. Every jiva also has a spiritual identity, and we should not criticize that. He also has a spiritual possessiveness, and we cannot criticize that. Unfortunately, the material identity is associated with a body. Aham means my body. I am my body. And the mama refers to other bodies related to oneself or things related to one's body. So it's all bodily identification. And similarly, when we think of another person, we're thinking of that person's body, and his possessions are every material possessions in relation to his body. So this whole concept of aham and mama in the material world is related to one's identity with the material body. I wish you could say it's false ego. And that leads to all sorts of problems in the material world. But we also have a spiritual identity. So the jiva is defined, or the atma is defined as a spiritual particle with its sense of identity by nature. But this is different from the material identity, where the jiva identifies himself as a material body. There is an identity of the soul as soul. This becomes perverted or distorted due to false ego. With false ego, then we identify with the material body. Take the false ego away, then we're back to atma, identifying itself. Which is the goal of yogis and gyanis, to give up the false identity and understand the real identity. So this is the nature of the jiva. Each jiva has a sense of I, which makes them different from every other jiva. So spiritually, all jivas are different. And this is the definition of jiva. Jiva means many. Many spiritual particles with individual identities. If they're individual particles of one identity, they would just be like Krishna. Krishna has many forms, but he's only one identity. But these are individuals with individual identity, all separate. And they identify themselves as separate from each other, other atmas, and also separate from Supreme Lord. So that's a spiritual aham. What about spiritual possessiveness? So, of course, in Brahman stage, there's no such thing, because there isn't anything to possess. There's no perception of anything. If one has an identity in the spiritual world, then the mind consists of possessing Supreme Lord. So bhava and prem are defined in terms of mama, mamatva, possessiveness. In bhava stage, the atma becomes possessive of the Supreme Lord. He thinks of possessing the Lord. The Lord is mine. And that becomes more intense in prema, the sense of possessiveness of the Lord. In other words, he has a very great attachment to the Supreme Lord in relation to himself. So this is called spiritual possessiveness. And that's a good quality. And the more that increases, then the higher the prema. So therefore, aham and mama are not necessarily bad. They are associated with material identity and material objects. Then they become subject to criticism. So here, Yudhisthira is talking about the material possessiveness and the material identity of I. This is ultimately ignorance. So in scripture and in yoga scripture also, they identify the cause of everything in the material world as ignorance or avidya, ajnana. And this becomes personified as ahankara in the material world, where we identify with the material body. That's our ignorance. And then we develop desires for material things, and
If we don't get the desires fulfilled or there's some obstruction to our desires, we develop hatred. So we have two tendencies arising from our false identity. That is ichha and dvesha. I like this, I don't like that. And all of our activities are in terms of those desires. I like that, I don't like that. And this gives rise to karma. Karma gives rise to suffering. Okay? Well, this is the problem in the material world, starting with ignorance and then our false identity. We end up with bodies in the material world and suffering. So that's why it is criticized. So everyone in the material world has this tendency. They think in terms of self. Unfortunately, every other limited evening is also thinking in terms of his self. This is me and this is mine. And therefore there is conflict. This is me, that is you, this is mine, this is yours. And maybe I want what you have, and so I want to take it. Well, something that you have, I want. And then we get conflict. So we get a lot of problems due to this material identity. Yudhisthira is here pointing out that the Lord doesn't have such false identity with material body, and therefore he can be very peaceful. And similarly, the devotees also have this same quality of not having material ignorance, ahankara, possessiveness, etc. Just like Supreme Lord. So, that means that the devotee has given up that material identity, material ahankara, etc. But he's gone further than that. The Gani and the Yogi also give up material identity and they get liberation. So that is easily achieved by the devotee. It's not a problem for the devotee to give up material identity. In fact, it's described in Nectar Devotion that if one attains bhava stage, then that devotee derives liberation, freedom from ahankara, aham mama, etc. It's useless. He's not really interested in it. So it's achieved by the devotee, but it's not his main interest at all. It's something very insignificant to come to that stage of not having ahankara and whatever anymore. It's automatically achieved by the devotee. So his interest is something else. And that is his spiritual identity and his relationship with the Lord. That is spiritual aham and mama. So his goal is not simply to give up material identity and its possessiveness, but to develop spiritual identity and spiritual possessiveness. That's the devotee's desire. So therefore the devotee gives up all of this material stuff, but then he has this other identity and this other possessiveness. And that distinguishes a devotee from the Gani or the Yogi in a liberated state, where they simply give up material identity. So this is natural, of course, to the Supreme Lord. He is never affected by ignorance. That one of the six qualities of Bhagavan is knowledge. That means eternal knowledge. Never any ignorance. Never any covering over him of ahankara or anything else. He's completely aware of everything at all times. So that's a supreme position. So impossible for him to enter the material world and act under ahankara like a normal person. Whatever he does is perfect. And that was described by Yudhisthira previously, that we can't understand his actions, but his actions are all perfect and they in no way degrade him. In the material world, everyone is under the influence of false identity, ahankara, ignorance, etc. And then they do activities and they create karma. So those activities definitely have to be condemned. The Lord does activities? No. It's not under ahankara. Not under the same influence. In fact, completely opposite, all spiritual. Similarly, the devotees do activities. Again, we cannot criticize those activities. They're also perfect, beyond karma. Because they do not arise from material ahankara and material ignorance. They're not motivated by selfish desire for enjoyment. So one cannot criticize the activities of the devotee. What to speak of criticizing the Supreme Lord? Even the devotee cannot be criticized for his activities. Of course, this refers to devotees on the level of prema. They've fully developed and there's no fault in them. If one is doing sadhana, then he may have faults and should have faults. Because he hasn't become completely free of anartas. And it's only in bhava stage that ahankara is completely destroyed. So all the stages before that necessarily have some effect of ahankara in them. So faults can arise in devotees. But Krishna says, it doesn't matter. Even if you commit the most sinful activity, you're still my devotee. So the Lord understands that in the sadhana state, it's possible to commit sinful activities, whatever, due to influence of ignorance. But the Lord is more important that the devotee progress towards prema, and then he'll be free of all faults. So devotee on a lesser level, he does activities. Yes, they may be faulty. But certainly less faulty than the activities of a person who is not a devotee. Because the Lord says, even if you do these activities, I still accept you as a devotee. And one doesn't have to do any prayaschitta to counteract those sinful activities. Whereas someone in the material world will have to suffer unless he does some prayaschitta or atonement. A devotee, all he has to do is continue devotional service. And therefore he's free from any punishment or atonement or anything. Therefore, the Lord overlooks those faults in the devotee's activities. Rather, he is more attracted to the other activities, those activities of bhakti. So as long as the devotee is concentrating on the activities of bhakti, then if those sinful activities are there, the Lord overlooks it. If those devotional activities stop, then of course he does sinful activity. Then it's a different case. So the Lord is speaking about a devotee who is absorbed in bhakti, but faults arise. So the Lord overlooks that. If the person isn't doing bhakti, then of course the person is subject to karma and whatnot. So the devotees gradually develop to this stage. It is described that people are like spatika, crystals. Because if you put a crystal which is clear in color near a red object, it looks red. If you put it near a blue object, it looks blue. So people are easily influenced by sangha. So if a person is near materialist, he is likely to become materialistic. If you put him near aparadis, he will become aparadi. You put him near a devotee, then he will become devotional. So, the devotee, of course, is also associating with Supreme Lord. So because of that, he will also develop qualities like the Supreme Lord. So, we associate with the Lord by serving Him, worshipping Him, chanting His name, hearing about Him, etc. So, one of the first qualities to develop in bhakti is subhada, which means the devotee develops spiritual qualities. And these are qualities similar to the Lord's qualities. So we see that the Supreme Lord has 64 qualities as Krishna, 60 as Vishnu, 55 as Shiva, and for others, 50. That is, regular jivas can develop 50 of those qualities like Krishna, but of course in small quantity because he's only a jiva. But they can develop 50 qualities which are similar to Krishna's 50 qualities. Why? Because of sangha. They associate favorably with Krishna in a very intimate way and they start developing similar qualities. So one of the qualities, of course, is knowledge, not ignorance. So naturally, as the devotee performs bhakti and associates with the Lord, then he will develop lack of ignorance, destruction of ahankara, etc., lack of possessiveness, all these things will manifest in the devotee. Okay? So he'll become similar to the Supreme Ruler. So no, not surprising. Mm-hmm. The devotee is intimately associated with the Lord, so naturally, just like a crystal, will develop similar qualities. Mm-hmm. So the devotee develops spiritual qualities similar to the Lord. Yudhisthira says here that we cannot criticize the Lord for his activities. He in no way decreases by those activities. So similarly, devotee does activities, and no decrease. We cannot criticize the devotee for those activities and think he's doing karma or whatnot. So Yudhisthira is doing activities. He is not nishkriya, without activity. He does activities. But not material, no material effect. So some people will think Yudhisthira is going to perform a Rajasuya sacrifice, material sacrifice for material position. But it looks like that, but for the devotee it's not. It's completely different. It's all glorification of Krishna. And it has no material effect, it only has spiritual effect. However, the effect of bhakti is, it gives everything. Everything spiritual, everything material. That's good. So, therefore, if Yudhisthira does some activity of service for Krishna, he gets spiritual effect, that is, bliss. Krishna's pleased, he gets bliss. But, the Lord also bestows everything. So that Yudhisthira becomes the most famous wealthy person in the material world. Of course, we can say his wealth ultimately is spiritual, but from material perception, oh, he's a ruler of the world, so he's got material wealth or whatever like that. But actually, it's spiritual. In any case, the Lord gives everything to those devotees, so they don't lack in any way. So this is the nature of the Supreme Lord in relation to the devotee. Just as the Lord is faultless, so the devotee also becomes faultless and beyond the criticism of the material world. So Yudhisthira is making a very good point here concerning the Lord and the devotees, that they're all beyond the material realm, even though from materialistic point of view they look like ordinary material people. And of course Krishna is more subjected to criticism than other forms of the Lord, because he looks more human and he acts more human, and he tends not to advertise his aspect as Supreme Lord so much as other forms of the Lord. So Yudhisthira is making sure that everyone understands that actually, though he looks human, Krishna's Supreme Lord. Later on we see that in spite of that, the Kauravas were envious, so they could not understand this, and they just took Krishna as an ordinary person again. And Shishupal began insulting Krishna also. So some people have very great difficulty understanding the nature of Krishna. But even if he displays activities as Supreme Lord, still they will not accept. So we see that Krishna showed his form as the Vishwarupa to Duryodhana when he went there to try to plead with them that don't have a battle of Kurukshetra. And everyone was shocked when they saw this universal form. Then Krishna came back to his normal form. And then Duryodhana said, "Oh, it's a trick." It's a trick. He's not Supreme Lord. It's a trick. You know, whatever you show to a demon, even if you show great powers as Vishnu or Ramchandra or universal form or whatever, the demon will not accept that anyway. So mainly it's the devotees who are willing to accept any form, whether it's Krishna or whatever. But even the devotees may have difficulty understanding Krishna, and they don't all appreciate Krishna because he doesn't act like God in all cases. But those who are qualified, they understand and they appreciate. So Yudhisthira is one of those persons, and therefore he's placed quite high in the hierarchy of devotees because he has a very personal, intimate relationship with Krishna.
mentioned the Shubhada and the Kleshakti. Sometimes if I am some devotees of practicing devotees for many years, they're not able to give up the Anantas. In truth, externally they behave in the same way. Sometimes we feel that even the outsiders don't follow the regulation. They act more better, truthful, honesty. Mm. It's very difficult to understand this.
Yeah, well, definitely these two things should start, Subhada and Kleshagni, with the performance of bhakti, and of course it continues all the way through into bhava stage. And according to the expertise with which the devotee performs bhakti, will get better results. Just like if someone studies hard, they get better results than if they don't study for their exams. So if one practices attentively and with devotion, then one will get those effects quite nicely. If we see that a devotee has a lot of anarthas continually, then we have to conclude that the bhakti is not being performed in the proper way. Something wrong with it. It's not being done. And of course, bhakti in any form has some effect, but very slow effect. So therefore, if these anarthas keep showing up, then it must be some fault in the process of devotional service. And therefore, the effect of bhakti becomes weak, and they're progressing very, very slow. That is one way in which we can look at all these anarthas and whatever like that. At the same time, a devotee may develop and be in quite a high stage, but he's not free from all the anarthas yet. So, therefore, he may display some fault. If it is not constant, then we should not criticize it. It becomes aparad. If it becomes constant, of course, then we have to understand there is a problem, and then he has to begin to introspect and correct himself. Otherwise, he'll end up with greater problems later on in his devotional service. But if the problems are, let's say, temporary, then we don't criticize, with the understanding that the process of bhakti will take care of them. He'll become purified, purified, and purified as time goes on.
Studies very nicely get good marks. And outside world, the story is always analyzed only on his international mark. You don't see his quality or inner values. Hmm. Similar thing can happen in the devotional service.
Well, Krishna sees everything. It's not that anybody is examining from externally. It's Krishna. So he knows internally, and his main examination point is the amount of bhakti, not the external factors. So you may, through devotional service, do many things which are material achievements, like build a temple or do this or distribute more books than other temples. But it can be only a material symptom due to material qualification of, being able to organize things properly, etc., etc. May not be devotion at all. But Krishna can see the devotion. So, therefore, you pass or fail not on your material accomplishments, even in devotional service, but on the amount of bhakti there is. Definitely.
So he's also particular seeing his devotees here, showing his possessiveness.
Yeah. Just like the devotee becomes more and more possessive of the Lord according to the amount of prema. From bhava it is mamata, and in prema it is atisai mamata, very great possessiveness. And of course, you go higher and higher, and we get to the gopis, it's very, very possessive. And if it's Radha, it's the most possessive. And then correspondingly, Krishna's more and more possessive also of those different types of devotees. But in general, he calls all the devotees as mine, tadiya, or whatever. They belong to the Lord, my devotee, or sva. They belong to me, they're my own. So that is expressed in the word Bhagavan, where van means vas, to live. So one explanation is the devotee lives in the Lord and the Lord lives in the devotee, so they're very intimately related with each other, possessive of each other. So nothing wrong with that. That's part of bhakti itself and part of the Supreme Lord.
But you explain this to the one, but you suggest can be both also, like both also possessiveness.
Yeah?
Possessiveness, but like, but
Oh, Bhagavan, he possesses Bhaga, auspicious qualities. Yeah. Lord possesses auspicious qualities. Six qualities, in fact.
You're saying that even within the spiritual world, the gopis, and even among themselves, there is a possessiveness, even sometimes they fight also. Sometimes the others prevent to do, they fight each other because of the Krishna.
Yeah.
Krishna is mine.
Yeah.
Others say, no, I'm Krishna's.
Yeah.
Even among themselves, there's a fight.
Yeah.
How to understand this? But if same service like to do many devotees simultaneously, even among themselves, among the devotees of the, there is a competition, or something, there is a conflict also.
So it may become a material competition because they may have material identities and material whatever ambitions or whatever, so it may not be on that pure level, but in the spiritual world then it's all centered on pleasure for Krishna, and Krishna expands himself to satisfy every devotee there.
And the question was, in the spiritual world, in the Brahman, there also seems a possessiveness, like, you know, this man, that person, also he doesn't have the body, still he thinks that I exist in the Brahman state.
Yeah.
So still, you know, although they don't have any quality, only sense of existence, still remain in the state of Brahman also.
Yeah. Well, they simply exist. It's called consciousness. Chinmatra.
Yeah, that person can understand that I exist.
Well, in one sense, but it's even that sense of I is minimized. It's just existing, according to the Mayavadis at least. And now we say that's impossible. You cannot have just a simple existence state. So we say that it's impossible not to have a sense of I and be conscious of something. So immediately we think I exist, then we start getting identity, and then, you know, it starts giving a concept of duality. So they avoid that sense. Existence only. Chinmatra, consciousness only. Consciousness. With no I and no object of I. But then the argument against that is such a thing doesn't exist. That we, if we're conscious, we should be conscious of something. Conscious of the self, conscious of other things. So that's what the Vaishnavas argue, that that state of simple consciousness is not, it's imaginary.
And the person was saying the material world, non-devotees suffer because of their previous karma. And sometimes when devotees commit offense, and they also get some kind of suffering for that. So these offense also commit karma, like almost like a karma.
Oh yeah. Well, they can get two effects. One is karma. The other is the bhakti decreases. So two things happen. They can get both effects.
So for that, they suffer.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
My devotee.
Yeah.
Not only the my devotee.
They're my part. My parts. They're my parts. Yeah. But there's nothing wrong with that because it has no negative aspects of exploitation or whatever, or enjoyment in the material sense.
Since he is God, he has every right to claim. Nobody can question
him. Yeah, by nature he owns everything, he is everything. So it's not a problem for the Supreme Lord to identify in that way. Of course, when he speaks of devotees, then that mama or they are mine is a little different because it's based on prema. Whereas jivas in general, it's not exactly the same type of relationship.
And Rishi, new devotee Krishna, he may also think that I'm also in that type.
Well, in one sense, yes, the Lord is compassionate. Everybody's acting as paramatma for normal persons, so it's rather neutral. Nevertheless, the Lord is not indifferent to any jiva.
Innumerable spiritual particles. at what point of time the jiva gets an individual identity?
They always have an individual identity.
They don't.
They always have this individual identity.
They're always individuals. And that's reflected in ahankara. Everybody has a separate identity from everybody else.
That means jiva is not free from the ahankara. Always, that ahankara remains always with him.
Where? In the material world?
In the material and spiritual world. Because in
this we have spiritual ahankara.
In the material, yeah. Still ahankara remains with the jiva. It may be material and spiritual.
Well, we have ahankara in the spiritual world. I am the servant of Krishna.
Yeah,
in the material world, we have ahankara. I am the material body.
That means the ahankara remains always.
Yeah.
When you say that when you are executing devotional service, it becomes spiritualized, then how come somebody having some attitude to exceed other services can be considered to be material?
What's that?
Somebody who has an attitude to do better than some other devotee, how we can consider that it is material?
Well, we have do devotional service, but we can have material motives in doing that. Yeah, I will do devotional service in order to become famous. I will do devotional service in order to make money or to enjoy materially. So we can do devotional service, but we can have all sorts of material motives behind that also, which contaminate it. It's still bhakti, but it's less effective.
But it's difficult to understand also. Is it actually material or spiritual? It's difficult to understand. I'm saying it's difficult to understand.
Well, in one sense, for the individual, it may because he is so subjective about his own position, but others will probably be able to detect the nature of his motive or whatever like that. Well, ahankara means identity of I. Thinking of one's own identity. So it's there in the spiritual world, it's also in the material world. But we call it false identity in the material world, or false ego. We have false ego and real ego, we can say.